It is Monday, May the 15th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, North Korea carries out another missile launch. Also ahead, just how dangerous is this current ransomware attack?
What you're dealing with here is an unprecedented cyber attack. It is a relatively simple cyber attack, however, so that means that cyber attacks in the future could be even worse than this one.
Could President Trump's firing of the FBI director cause a constitutional crisis? Plus, Neil Diamond back out on tour. Hello everyone, I'm Steve Norman. North Korea today said it had successfully conducted a newly developed mid- to long-range missile on Sunday and that the leader, Kim Jong-un, had supervised the test. North Korea's official news agency said the missile was launched at the highest angle so it would not affect the security of neighboring countries and flew 787 kilometers, reaching an altitude of more than 2,100 kilometers. The report indicated that North Korea wanted to verify its capability to carry what they called a large-scale heavy nuclear warhead. VOA asked Ken Goss, Director of International Affairs Group at the Center for Naval Analyses, if the launch was expected.
They have definitely made progress on their indigenously developed missile systems. We believe this is probably a KN-17, which is made up primarily of indigenous parts and technologies. They've had much more success with that than they have some of the imported technologies that they have done. So it doesn't really surprise me if they could pull this off. They've made steady progress. The North Koreans learned from their failures.
We also asked Gauz if the launch had anything to do with the recent swearing-in of Moon Jae-in as South Korea's new president.
Yeah, well, again, this is a typical North Korean playbook. Whenever there is a turnover in the South Korean government, usually it's not too long after that that you see the North Koreans conduct some sort of a provocation. It allows them to calibrate their foreign policy toward the new administration. They can kind of see how South Korea is going to react with the United States, how they're going to interact with the international community. Are they going to join in a united front against North Korea? Are they going to seek an inter-Korean solution? So it allows them to raise the tension before they seriously engage in diplomacy.
And there are indications that this missile landed very close to Russian territory. We asked Gauz if Moscow might react.
Yeah, that was the interesting thing about this, is that where it did land, it's got to obviously upset Russia to a certain extent that a missile came so close to their territory. That said, you know, the Russians are going to play their cards close to the vest. They have larger equities involved in how they deal with the situation. So I wouldn't necessarily expect that they're going to join forces with the United States in condemning North Korea. They'll probably take a line a lot similar to what China takes, although privately they probably will warn the North Koreans not to do it again.
And what about any reaction from Washington? And might there be some more sanctions on Pyongyang, as suggested on Sunday by the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley?
That would be, yes. I think the U.S. is definitely going to take the hard line, followed by Japan. Obviously, the Moon Jae-in administration's reaction will be very interesting to see whether he falls in line with that hard line or whether he looks to soften it. I suspect China will call for all sides to kind of calm down. And as I said, Russia will probably take something similar to that sort of position. If this thing comes to the Security Council, what the Russia and China vote will be, it will be fairly interesting to watch.
Ken Goss is Director of International Affairs Group at the Center for Naval Analyses here in Washington. We should also note here that North Korea's official news agency quoted Kim Jong-un, who has accused the United States, in his words, of browbeating countries that have no nukes, and warned Washington not to misjudge the reality that its mainland is in North Korea's, in his words, sighting range for a strike. Also in the news, U.S. and European officials scrambling to catch the culprits behind a massive ransomware attack that caused damage worldwide over the weekend. For some perspective on this attack, VOA's Victor Beatty speaks with cybersecurity expert Colonel Cedric Layton, founder of the Cedric Layton Associates, who says this current ransomware attack is the biggest one ever perpetrated.
What you're dealing with here is an unprecedented cyber attack. It is a relatively simple cyber attack, however, so that means that cyber attacks in the future could be even worse than this one.
Is this a wake-up call?
It is absolutely a wake-up call because these kinds of attacks are perpetrated by people who have access to certain amounts of malware, certain malicious code, as it's called. But what can really happen here is this type of malware can be executed by people who are actually not professional hackers. So the risk of it spreading to other places, the risk of it being something that is used by bad actors in the cyber domain is very, very high. And because of that, this can really get into a very difficult process for not only the internet, but for a critical infrastructure on a global basis.
Reports indicate the malicious software used may have been stolen from the U.S. National Security Agency. Microsoft's president and chief legal officer Brad Smith said this is the latest example of why the stockpiling of vulnerabilities by governments is a big problem.
The stockpiling of vulnerabilities is exactly that. It is a big problem, but the issue is also that if those vulnerabilities aren't patched, then it puts a lot of people in danger. And putting a lot of people in danger is something that is bad for commerce. It is bad for personal safety. It is, in essence, bad for the internet and for society at large. So Microsoft has a point there. It is something that if vulnerabilities are stockpiled, there is a huge risk that they can fall into the wrong hands, and that's clearly what happened in this case.
Apparently, this problem could widen on Monday when people go back to work.
It certainly can, and the reason the problem could widen is because people are going to find tons of emails in their inboxes, which they normally do on Monday mornings. The problem that you're going to run into is that a lot of people are going to click on emails that they shouldn't be clicking on. So it really behooves everyone to pay very close attention to the kinds of emails they're receiving. If the user or if the sender appears to be somebody who is not a person that is known or from an unknown entity, then it is best to question that email, have the IT team quarantine it, and examine it for malicious software.
Are patches the answer? Is there a larger answer?
Well, patching is a temporary answer. The larger answer is twofold. People have to take cybersecurity very seriously, and they don't. A lot of people around the world are using pirated software, and they're using older forms of Microsoft Windows, which makes them exceptionally vulnerable to these kinds of attacks. The other part of it is cybersecurity itself is a team sport. It has to involve the entire organization, whether it's a corporation, a government entity, or a nonprofit. And the failure of a lot of organizations to understand what they're up against is really creating a major problem and a major vulnerability for everyone who uses the internet.
Colonel Cedric Layton of Cedric Layton Associates and former intelligence officer in the U.S. Air Force, as well as an official with the U.S. National Security Agency. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, what does the future hold for Liberia? Who will lead the West African nation when President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf leaves office in October at the end of her second term? 2 million Liberians have registered to vote, and nearly half of those are women. What's at stake in Liberia? On the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. While the search is underway for a new FBI director here in the United States after President Trump fired James Comey last week, VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman tells VOA's Jim Stevenson intrigue continues to mount after the White House offered conflicting rationales for Comey's dismissal. President Trump also hinted recordings may have existed of his conversations with Comey, who until last week oversaw a probe of alleged Russian interference in the U.S. presidential election.
Well, here's the bottom line. The president does, in fact, have the authority to fire the FBI director for any time, for any reason or for no reason. It is entirely within the discretion of the president to do so. However, when you have a White House that offers a sort of rolling smorgasbord of rationales for the firing, many of which are in conflict with one another, when that FBI director is at the head of a Justice Department probe of Russian interference in last year's election and any possible collusion that may have existed between Russia and certain elements of Trump's inner circle, and you have this man fired by the president, who could be among those in the sights of the Justice Department during their unfolding investigation, it just looks bad, and it looks highly suspicious. This is something that Democrats are pointing out, and this is something that many Republicans on Capitol Hill are pointing out. Republicans, all of them, will point out that Trump is within his rights to do so. However, the timing of this and the reasons offered for doing so seem mystifying.
There have been many comparisons drawn to the Watergate era, when then-President Richard Nixon had fired the special prosecutor looking into dealings with the Watergate break-in. It has similarities in a sense, but it's different in many ways.
Well, Comey has had a stormy relationship with Republicans and with Democrats going back to last year. Republicans were quite peeved when James Comey went in front of the cameras to announce that while Hillary Clinton had in fact been extremely sloppy and careless in handling classified information on private email servers, that this did not get into the realm of criminal wrongdoing for which there would be a criminal prosecution. So essentially gave her a pass on that. The Clinton people were a bit miffed at the time, because he very much laid out that while there would be no criminal prosecution, that Clinton essentially had treated national security documents without the care that one would want to see, and in fact, which law mandates for these documents. But then the Clinton people were also extremely miffed right before the election, when James Comey sent a letter announcing that the probe was being relaunched. This is someone who has been in the sights of Democrats and Republicans, but it was a Republican president who fired him. Jim, you were talking about the comparisons with Watergate in the early 1970s with President Richard Nixon. I'm afraid that Donald Trump elevated some of those comparisons with his own Twitter use. Quite inexplicably, the president sent out a tweet mentioning Comey by name, seemingly threatening of the now former FBI director, saying that he better be careful what he says in public, lest any tapes be released of his conversations with the president. So, of course, it was Richard Nixon who, quite famously, in the Nixon White House, had many conversations recorded. And it was those conversations that helped lead to his downfall and his eventual resignation in 1974.
That is VOA's Michael Bowman speaking with my colleague Jim Stevenson. Well, some observers have said the events surrounding the firing of the FBI director by President Trump has created a political crisis, and others have gone further and said it has created a constitutional crisis. One of them is Alan Lichtman, a political scholar and historian who teaches at American University. He speaks now with International Edition's Lori London.
The president has provoked a constitutional crisis by threatening our democratic institutions and by disregarding the normal checks and balances. The firing of Comey is but one of many serious incidents. We also have the obvious collusion between the White House and Representative Nunes to derail the congressional investigation. We have allegations that the president asked Comey for his personal loyalty, when, of course, the FBI director is supposed to be independent. We have the thinly veiled threat that Comey received from President Trump after the firing. We have the non-action by the White House after the acting attorney general warned that their national security advisor was a threat to national security because he was likely compromised by the Russians. We have the Attorney General of the United States lying to the United States Senate about his communications with the Russians. So it's not just one episode. It is a piling on of many. And there is a constitutional remedy for a constitutional crisis. The framers fully understood that a rogue president could crash through checks and balances. So they put in the Constitution the ultimate safeguard of democracy, impeachment, as a constitutional, peaceful, and orderly way of preserving our institutions. It's time then to invoke that proper constitutional remedy. Not, of course, to impeach Donald Trump yet, but to launch an impeachment investigation. I would say to Donald Trump, President Trump, if what you're saying is true, that there's absolutely nothing going on between you, your team, and the Russians, or any other untoward activity by your administration, then you should cooperate with an impeachment investigation to clear the air. You should encourage every member of your team to testify under oath. You should release all pertinent materials. Two presidents have been subject to charges of obstruction of justice. Richard Nixon was charged with obstruction of justice in an article adopted by the House Judiciary Committee. He avoided impeachment, of course, by resigning, and Bill Clinton was subject to a charge of obstruction of justice by the full House, although he was ultimately acquitted by the Senate. So there is ample precedent to vote on articles of impeachment dealing with obstruction of justice. And then, of course, there is the substance of any collusion between the Trump team and the Russians that would have to be investigated. And I would think the impeachment investigation would also have to investigate conflicts of interest, because Trump did not divest himself of his holdings.
It doesn't appear, because of it being a Republican-controlled House of Representatives, that there's a will to do that.
People don't realize, though, even though it's a Republican Congress, if the Democrats demand an impeachment investigation, it would only take some two dozen Republicans. That's just 10% of Republicans in the House to create a House majority and establish such an investigation. When it comes to members of Congress, their first priority is survival. And there are 23 Republicans, about as many as you would need for a majority, sitting in districts won by Hillary Clinton in 2016. And if Republicans in Congress come to believe that Trump is a liability to their survival, they could well turn against him. Hasn't happened yet, but we are very, very early in the process.
That's Alan Lichtman. He is a political scholar and historian who teaches at American University here in Washington. He was speaking with my colleague, Lori London. Over the weekend, President Trump received an honorary doctorate from Liberty University, and then he spoke to the graduates.
You will have the confidence to speak the hopes in your hearts and to express the love that stirs your souls. And you will have the faith to replace a broken establishment with a government that serves and protects the people.
Liberty University's president, Jerry Falwell Jr., the son of the conservative evangelist Jerry Falwell Sr., helped Mr. Trump win 80% of the white evangelical vote in last year's election. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
In 2016, scientists released a pair of studies that provided evidence the Earth and the Moon were showered with bits of star material from a nearby supernova or several supernovas about 2.5 million years ago. The researchers placed the exploding star or stars at a distance of about 300 light years away from us. Now, a new study proposes the stars actually exploded about half that distance. Study authors say that while a star exploding from such a distance today could cause some effects to Earth, it wouldn't cause the kind of serious damage that, for example, touch off mass extinctions. The distance a supernova could spell disaster to our planet's living creatures is estimated to be about 25 light years from Earth. But the new study also suggests that an exploding star at twice that distance could also spell doom. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. You know, it's that time of the year when musical groups are out touring around here and there, and this year it's highlighted by a lot more senior songwriters and singers of pop and rock being out on tour. He's one of the greatest singer-songwriters of all time, selling more than 128 million records, and he's still touring the world performing to huge crowds 5 decades after getting into the music business. Neil Diamond hit the music scene in the 1960s with hit after hit, including some of those ever-so-popular sad songs. He's known for writing some of the very best, like Home Before Dark off a recent album.
For me, to be at your door, talking till 4 in the morning, I've been so alone in places unknown, but I knew I'd get home before dawn. You need what you need. Say what you want. There's not much you can do when the feeling is gone. Maybe blue skies above, but it's cold when your love's on the rocks. First they say they want you, how they really need you. Suddenly you find you're out there, walking in a storm.
Love on the Rocks, a huge hit for Neil Diamond, who's won just about every music industry award out there time and again.
You can do or say you got to leave, just get away. We all know the song.
And of course, no Neil Diamond concert playlist would be complete without Sweet Caroline.
Where do you at? I can't begin to know it, but then I know that it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring?
Singing better than the best of them. Neil Diamond's current concert tour taking him all over the world.
Hand. Touching hands. Reaching out. Touching me. Touching you. So good. I've been inclined
Sounds pretty good at 75, don't you think? Still out on the road singing songs. Platinum-selling R&B singers Tyrese, Anthony Hamilton, Kem, and Brandy celebrated Mother's Day, which was Sunday, 2 days earlier with a concert in front of thousands of fans in Brooklyn, New York. Here's Brandy singing Angel in Disguise. Should check out that video. I mean, they were cheering for Brandy as she was all over the stage. It was the second annual Mother's Good Music Festival, they call it. Last year's Mother's Day Good Music Festival featured R&B singer Monica, by the way, Brandy's former singing partner. Also last year, Tank and Keisha Cole. Well, we should also mention some big things happened in Europe over the weekend. Portugal's Salvador Sobral has won the Eurovision Song Contest with a romantic ballad. Ballads were big things because runner-up Christian Kostov of Bulgaria sang what's called a power ballad. Eurovision, in its 62nd year, is aimed at an apolitical entertainment, but the intentions soured a bit this year when Russia's participation, it was scuttled by the host Ukraine over the two nations' diplomatic and military conflicts. How about that? Thanks for listening to The Voice of America, an international edition. Always good to have you with us. And a big thank you to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Chaz Hall. Good to have you with us, everyone, today. I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Monday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
United Nations peacekeeping missions are critical to assisting war-torn countries get back on their feet and to transition from conflict to peace. For over 60 years now, UN peacekeeping missions have operated in some of the most dangerous and difficult environments in the world, dealing with conflicts and their aftermath the world over. In that time, 126 countries have contributed peacekeepers to the United Nations. Given the wide spectrum of cultures involved, in order to be successful in their common endeavor, they must train together. Now more than ever, there is a growing global demand for trained peacekeeping personnel, writes Andrew Strike of the U.S. State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs in a recent blog post. International stability requires peace operations, and peace operations require well-trained, effective peacekeepers. That is why in late March and early April, the government of Nepal and the United States Pacific Command co-hosted Shanti Pious III, a multinational peacekeeping exercise that brought together participants from over 30 countries. Partnerships play a critical role in meeting global challenges, from maintaining peace to providing humanitarian assistance after natural disasters, said U.S. Ambassador to Nepal, Elena Teplitz. This kind of multinational training can deepen mutual understanding and respect and encourage further collaboration if we're doing it right and we're committed to this mission. The Shanti Pious III, which translates as Peace Endeavor, is supported by the U.S. Global Peace Operations Initiative, a U.S. government-funded security assistance program that aims to strengthen international peacekeeping capacity in support of United Nations and regional peace operations. The initiative provides the capacity-building support to help countries around the world contribute to the establishment of international peace and security. The United States is committed to UN peacekeeping missions, mandates, and tasks that support the rules-based international order, a system that benefits all nations, said Admiral Harris, head of U.S. Pacific Command. That's why we continue to work together with partners from the countries represented at Shanti Pious III.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.